Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Kate Young.
Alice Waters' visit kind of just re-established the feeling that I already had that schools should have gardens for their kids to be at least part of, to see the progression of growing things and being part of it. And then the restaurant being across the street just felt like a no-brainer.
This week on our show, we'll go from garden to table with Chef Erica Yoakum and a group of elementary school kids. Amy Mayer from Harvest Public Media has a story about what the farm bill means for dairy farmers. And okra curry is on the menu with Chef Daniel Orr. That's all coming up on Earth Eats. And now for some news stories we're following, here's Mark Gilla.
Hey, Kate. First up, Procter & Gamble plans to create a limited run of dish soap bottles that use 10% recycled ocean plastics to help shine a spotlight on the growing problem of plastic waste clogging the world's oceans. The company launched a campaign to make 320,000 bottles for its Fairy Ocean plastic bottle, which would be sold in UK stores next year. The company is working with TerraCycle, a recycling firm that is focused on collection of beach plastics. A company representative told industry magazine Plastics Today that at least a quarter of the beach plastic going into the bottles is collected from the local market in Western Europe, with the rest coming from pollution hotspots around the world. The United Nations estimates that the equivalent of one garbage truck of plastic waste dumps into the world's oceans every minute. The United Nations also says plastic waste in oceans cost at least $8 billion in damage to marine ecosystems, and up to 80% of all marine litter is made of plastic. Planting small areas of native prairie could reduce water pollution from farm fields. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports on this new research.
Iowa State University professor Lisa Schulte Moore has studied so-called prairie strips for 10 years. They're patches of land strategically planted to native perennial mixes of grasses and flowers on the edges of crop fields.
By converting just a little bit of that cropped area to prairie strips, we get very substantial benefits.
Those include dramatically reducing soil loss, retaining nutrients such as nitrogen and phosphorus, and attracting more pollinators and birds. In addition, the research shows support from farmers and non-farmers alike for conservation with prairie strips. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
And as the food crisis in Puerto Rico slowly winds down, another crisis looms: water. Flooding from Hurricane Maria led to cross-contamination of sewer and freshwater, leaving at least 55% of the island's residents without access to clean drinking water and at risk for waterborne illnesses like typhoid and cholera. Unfortunately, however, many Puerto Ricans are not strangers to waterborne illnesses. Even before the recent hurricanes, the island consistently had the worst rate of drinking water violations of any state or territory, and almost 70% of the island's population drank water that violated federal health standards. Tom Burke, a professor of health policy at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, said to The Hill that this is a chronic problem for Puerto Rico, especially in underserved and poorer areas, where the infrastructure for both drinking water and wastewater is in need of upgrade or repair. Some hope the recent hurricanes and looming water crisis will bring attention, and more importantly, resources, to Puerto Rico's failing water systems. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killo, as well as Harvest Public Media, for this week's news.
Thank you, Mark.
No problem, Kate.
When you head to the supermarket, you want to see milk on the shelves at a reasonable price. That's one reason why the government supports dairy farmers, many here in the Midwest. But some dairy farmers say times are tough and the government's safety net doesn't work. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports.
At the Iowa State Fair, you can see where milk really comes from, the cows. Fairgoers eating ice cream can watch the milking process through a large window on the side of the milking parlor. Galen Fick is a dairy farmer who brought some of his cows to the fair. At home in northwest Iowa, he milks 50 brown Swiss every day.
The last 2 years have been very tough. I mean, the our inputs have gone up so much, not the feed part of it, but everything else, the labor issues and everything else goes up. And for us to make a profit makes it very tough.
FIC is enrolled in federal support. It's called the Margin Protection Program, a form of government-subsidized insurance which came online with the 2014 Farm Bill. That's the massive law that governs everything from food stamp benefits to farm supports like the dairy program. Farmers pay a fee to join, and they get a payout if their margin gets too tight. That's the difference between the cost of feeding cows and the price farmers get for milk. They can pay extra for more coverage.
The first time I went a little bit higher level, now I'm on the lower level, and it doesn't work. It's just been a failure all the way through.
Even the Department of Agriculture says the program isn't working as intended, so it's letting producers opt out early if they want. But FIC says some kind of federal help is necessary. 20 years ago, the U.S. had almost three times as many dairy farms as the 41,000 it has today.
Unfortunately, there's not that many people left to quit. So it's really a serious issue nowadays because there's so much milk surplus in the United States. We don't know where to go with this milk anymore.
Why do we have too much milk with fewer dairies? Modern technology makes farms more efficient, but to make money, they're also often much bigger. Some have thousands of cows. Global markets buy up some of our dairy products, but then farmers gear up to sell internationally, only to watch as trade winds blow a different direction. That can leave farmers here with lots of excess milk.
You can't have a program that's too generous because then it'll generate too much milk production and ultimately be self-defeating.
That's National Milk Producers Federation Vice President Chris Galen. But he says farmers do need to see tangible benefits. He says now is the time for change as Congress tackles the next farm bill. For example, Galen says the formula the government uses to calculate margin is flawed.
The overall margin that's being measured every month at the national level doesn't really reflect what the true economics are on dairy farms.
Galen says better math would calculate prices and costs more accurately. Still, even an improved program likely wouldn't please everyone. Matt Skelling is another Northwest Iowa dairy farmer with 150 cows. He says historically, dairy programs have helped small farmers like him.
You know, yeah, on the one hand, that's nice for us. On the other hand, is that really fair to the industry and to the taxpayer that's subsidizing that?
He says maybe it's time to see whether the industry can stand on its own. But while dairies might be okay without subsidies, and that's very much an open question, there's no doubt about something else. They need workers. Many dairies depend on immigrant labor to do the daily, year-round, physical, smelly work. Skelling says labor concerns weigh even more heavily on dairy farmers than milk prices.
It's been at a crisis level for the last couple of years, and it's getting quickly more critical as workers leave the country and whatnot.
As Congress drafts the next farm bill, farmers will be watching to see whether anything from D.C. makes a difference in the barn. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
More from Harvest Public Media at harvestpublicmedia.org.
I love growing okra. Not only is it fun to cook with, it also cuts a dashing figure in the garden. This time of year, it can look like a small forest in the vegetable patch. In late fall, the tall stalks are starting to lose their leaves, with those spiky seed pods jutting out, casting eerie skeletal shadows at nightfall, just in time for Halloween. Last year, Chef Daniel Orr shared a great recipe for curried okra. It's so simple and tasty, we had to share it again. Don't worry about the slime factor often associated with okra. Chef Orr has a solution for that.
So we're going to start with a nice hot pan, about a quarter cup of olive oil. Okay, and now we're going to add the okra. I'm just, this is nice, tender, young okra. So we're just going to toss it. We want to have the texture of the okra stay a little bit crunchy. We don't want to cook it a long time. So we're just getting it nice and hot. We're going to add our ginger and about 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh garlic. Right now I'm going to add some cider vinegar. This is a quarter cup of cider vinegar. And again, that's going to help keep that sliminess to a minimum. Now I got to run back to the spice shelf and get the most important ingredient. I forgot the curry. All right, we're going to add about a tablespoon of Madras curry, a couple cups of chickpeas. Now we're going to add the fresh vegetables, which are our multicolored sweet peppers or bell peppers and tomatoes. They're going to make a nice pretty color. And this is going to be a vegan dish, so vegans unite. We're going to actually use coconut milk instead of cream or dairy product in this. Okay, I'm going to bring that up to high heat again and season it with some salt and pepper. Then we'll let it reduce just a little bit. This is going to be good. Okay, we're going to take a handful of soft herbs. We use a mixture of parsley, scallions, chives, tarragon, cilantro if you like it. But all those soft herbs that don't really need to be cooked or removed. Then we have hard herbs, which are the ones that we call like rosemary, thyme, summer savory. About 5 minutes of cooking. I've got some nice jasmine rice, really good with curries, because you want to have a counterbalance. So you have the spiciness of the curry and then the mild flavor of the rice. And with a few black and white sesame seeds on the rice, we're good to go.
And there you have it. I told you it was simple, but the flavor is complex and the presentation is stunning. Get the recipe on our website, eartheats.org. Be sure to find us on Twitter, @EarthEats. Production support comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. And need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, needmoreroasters.com. Next, we go to Templeton Elementary School in Bloomington, Indiana. We're visiting a unique multi-age classroom with three teachers and students from kindergarten to sixth grade. On Thursday afternoons in this classroom, students get to choose an activity from a range of options called invitations. Some of the activities are led by invited guests. Some are student-led. Anything from origami to great artists to native plants. One of the activities this week is cooking with Erica. Erica Yoakum, chef and owner of a local restaurant, Feast, is making watermelon smoothies with a group of kids using ingredients from their own school garden.
Do you know where these watermelon came from?
I think our garden is where they came from.
And it took like 5 months to grow. It took forever.
They ended up with a total of 5 fairly good-sized watermelons. They planted the watermelon in the spring semester and harvested it last week.
Look at this watermelon you guys grew in your garden!
That one looks really good.
Whoa, my god, gorgeous. Oh my god,
it smells so good.
They start by prepping the garden fresh watermelon.
And then you guys can all come over here, and then we'll seed them and get them in small pieces.
Yeah,
can you do that?
What are you putting on the field?
But I'm going to cut the watermelons in half, and then you guys are going to scoop out all the yummy stuff and get rid of the seeds.
Okay.
On the table or here?
I think I'll cut them here and use your spoon to scoop pieces off into your bowl.
Okay.
So step one is processing the watermelon, and then what are you? You're going out to the garden?
We're going to go out to the garden and pick the last of the basil, and hopefully there's some mint out there. And then we're just going to blend that with some ice.
Sounds good.
They're pretty sweet on their own, so I don't even know how much honey we need to add.
Someone scoop these seeds that are all right there, because you're doing a good job at separating them all. There's just a lot of seeds in this one.
There's barely any seeds in here.
It's hard to get the watermelon out.
Yoakum's daughter, Nina Williams, is assisting her today, helping the kids scoop the watermelon.
Fingers and then scrape all of the meat out.
So we're supposed to, like, get the black seeds out?
Yeah.
And, like, because they're bigger.
I need help getting all these seeds out.
Is that the good stuff?
We're kids. We're not professional cookers. We don't go out and cook the watermelon shakes for the singer.
I cook pancakes for my
It's so good.
What did you taste?
We tasted some watermelon that tastes really good.
Came from?
The garden.
Okay, did you get your watermelon clean? We're gonna head to the garden.
Don't let the saints get in.
I'm trying to get some basil. That'd be good.
Out the saints.
It's time to head out to the garden for a few more ingredients.
Really strong and can carry one of these.
I feel really strong.
The whole way there.
I'm a football player.
You got it. One?
I play hockey, so I can do this.
I play hockey.
Come on, I play football. Maybe halfway you can switch. Muscles hurt.
First, they drop off the watermelon rinds in the school compost bins.
Wait, which one do we put it in?
And you just dump it. Wait, no, except this one.
This one?
This one right here.
No. Oh, wait. This one?
Put this back in the bin.
Okay, everyone stay here for just a second. I want to tell you, what are we going to garden for? Do you remember?
Mint!
Mint and basil. Does everyone know what those look like?
Yeah.
Let's find them together.
Wait, in the garden or just out?
One of the classroom teachers, Kevin Gallagher, is already out in the garden with a group of kids. They're cleaning up the green bean bed.
Mint and basil.
I found it.
Okay.
I found
it. Excuse me.
What's that?
That's
not.
This
is the tomato plant.
Yoakum is familiar with the garden. She's been helping families and teachers maintain the garden by showing up for work days in the summer.
There's a little bit of basil back there. There's some mint back there too.
Basil and mint. Not tomatoes today.
Don't pick this because this isn't mint.
Is this? That's lemon balm.
Yeah.
Can I smell it?
What have you got there?
Those are the ground cherries.
Ground cherries.
You can only pick the yellow ones, not the green ones because they're not ripe yet. There's only a couple yellow ones.
That smells good.
What have you got there?
I have some mint and some lemon balm.
What's it smell like?
Mint, it smells like mint. But lemon balm kind of smells like lemon cleaner.
Are you not... You're not going to put the lemon balm in the smoothie, are you?
No, we're not.
Good.
I think we have enough mint.
Yeah, we have enough mint.
Do you basil?
You pick basil. Good. Okay, anyone that was making watermelon shakes, let's go back and make them. Ready?
They've got the herbs and ground cherries. Now it's back to the classroom.
Delicious. It is? The onions are delicious. Ooh, they should serve them at Feast.
We need to get the ground cherries out of their little papery shells so people can peel the ground cherries and you can throw them right in with the watermelons. Just the cherry part, not the paper.
They had to go in there.
Where are these?
The ground cherries.
Oh.
Want to try one?
Can you try them?
Huh? You want to try one?
Can I help?
I'll let you have one.
Yeah.
Huh?
I'll go ahead. Sure.
Can I help corn and honey?
You can be the first one. We're going to make a few batches.
When cooking with kids, everyone wants a turn at each and every part of the process.
Laura, come over here and you can put some watermelon in. Yana, you can grab 5 strawberries.
Can I grab some strawberries?
You can grab some of the herbs. Over here, some of the basil.
Yeah,
here.
Can I put some basil in?
They're up to number 32. After she puts a little bit of the watermelon in. I have a piece of ice. Here's a blue spoon.
They fill the blender with watermelon, strawberries, ground cherries, mint, basil, honey, and ice. Finally, they get to try it.
Is it good?
Keep making more. Okay.
So great. That mint really blends in with it. I want another. So bad one.
They took our stuff kindly.
You like it?
Very, very, very much.
Very
So what did you think? Did you really like it?
Loved
it's
it.
Really, 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 really
good.
Really.
It's really good.
You liked it?
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite part of making it?
Going to the garden.
You like going to the garden?
Yeah.
Cooking together allows for great conversation.
I actually thought it was going to be fun.
Yeah.
Because it looked fun the first few times that we did it.
It's always fun when you make food. Mm-hmm. And then you can eat it.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
Yeah.
I loved it when I was a 2-year-old because I would get out a big bowl and I would just put a whole bunch of random things I found in the kitchen in it. And then I would put water and milk in it. And then
I did that too, actually.
And I would put a whole bunch of random things I found in the kitchen in it.
You made like soup?
Yeah.
But did you eat it?
No.
Neither
did I.
It's
not that dumb.
Go ahead.
I asked kindergartner Phoenix Gordon if she had done cooking with Erica before.
Yeah.
What did you guys make?
We made some vegetables with some salsa.
Oh, you made salsa. Did you get to taste it?
You always eat it, but you get like a
It was good.
Erica Yoakum started the Garden to Table sessions in the classroom this fall. What other things have you made with the kids this year?
So we started out making salsa with all the different cherry tomatoes, and we put ground cherries in the salsa. We've been putting those in everything. And they had some nice jalapenos growing in the garden, so we did jalapeno and basil, I think we put in, and some of the mint too. And then the next week we made pesto. with all the basil, and we got the garden or the garlic that was curing in the shed, which was great. This week we did our watermelon shake, and I think we're going to do something with pears next week. I don't know what, though. Something that doesn't involve an oven. There's green beans, too, I think, unless they got those. So we might do something with green beans.
So how long have you been working with the kids at Templeton?
About a month now. It's been really fun. They're the most excited sous chefs I've ever had.
And what inspired you to get involved?
Definitely Alice Waters' visit kind of just re-established the feeling that I already had that schools should have gardens for their kids to be at least part of, to see the progression of growing things and being part of it. And then the restaurant being across the street just felt like a no-brainer. So.
Should I put more water in?
Yeah, all the way up to number 32. Who hasn't put anything in the blender yet? Okay, you've been cutting though, so you're going to do the honey, okay?
Okay.
This is just the first time we're going to run the blender lots of times because we have to make some for everybody.
Oh, no. Can I help for a
find a cup.
Now remember, this multi-age classroom has three teachers and kids from kindergarten to sixth grade. The total number of students is 71. The group wants to offer a sample to each child in the classroom. Once the watermelon smoothie is poured into the cups, the kids in the group start distributing to the students in the other rooms who are working on different projects.
You can have, everyone that made one, you can try it.
That whole room has smoothies.
Layla Burgess was working on a cat painting in the K-2 room and had this to say about the watermelon smoothie.
I thought it was, like, good with the mixtures of mint and honey in it.
Here's sixth grader Ella Pierce.
My hands haven't been covered in a watermelon until today.
How's it feel?
It feels pretty good.
They've still got sweet potatoes to harvest and cucumbers, not to mention all the fall greens coming on. Looks like cooking with Erica will be a popular invitation choice in this K-6 class for weeks to come. You can see some photos from this story on our website, eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview, needmoreroasters.com. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. A shout out to the fabulous team of people that makes Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, Indiana University Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and that's our show. We'll see you next week.